slowly but surely we'll be whittled back to one world again, if we're left with that. Unless we have a war, Jared said, not hiding his skepticism.
That's right, Bhutan said.
The problem isn't humanity. It's the Colonial Union. Get rid of the Colonial Union. Replace it with a government that actually helps its people instead of farming them and keeping them ignorant for its own purposes. And join with the Conclave to get a reasonable share of new colonial worlds. With you in charge, I presume, Jared said.
Until we get things organized, yes, Bhutan said.
Minus the worlds that the RA and the Enisha, your allies in this adventure, take for their own, Jared said.
The RA and the Enisha weren't going to fight for free, Bhutan said.
And the Oban taking Earth, Jared said.
That's for me, Bhutan said. Personal request.
Must be nice, Jared said.
You continue to underestimate how badly the Oban want consciousness, Bhutan said.
I liked this better when I thought you were just trying to get revenge for Zoe, Jared said.
Bhutan reared back, as if he had been slapped. Then he leaned in close.
You know what the thought of losing Zoe did to me, Bhutan hissed. You know it!
But let me tell you something that you don't seem to know. After we took back Coral from the Array, the CDF Military Intelligence Office predicted the Array would make a counterattack and listed the 5 most likely targets. Omaha and Couple Station were right at the top of that list. And you know what the CDF did about it?
No, Jared said. Not a goddamn thing!
Bhutan spat the words. And the reason for that was that the CDF was spread thin in the aftermath of Coral, and some general decided what he really wanted to do was try to grab a colony world from the Rabu. In other words, it was more important to go after some new real estate than to defend what we already had. They knew the attack was coming, and they did nothing! And until the Oban contacted me, all I knew was that the reason my daughter died was because the Colonial Union didn't do what it's supposed to do, keep safe the lives of those in its protection. To keep safe my daughter. Trust me, Dirac, this has everything to do with Zoe.
And what if your war doesn't go the way you want it to?
Jared asked softly.
The Oban are still going to want their consciousness, and they'll have nothing to give you.
Bhutan smiled.
You're alluding to the fact that we've actually lost the Array and the Anishans as allies, he said.
Jared tried to hide his surprise and failed.
Yes, of course we know about that, and I have to admit it worried me for a while. But now we have something that I think puts us back on track and will allow the Oban to take on the Colonial Union by itself.
I don't imagine you'll tell me what that is, Jared said.
I'll be happy to tell you, Bhutan said. It's you.
Sagan scrabbled on the ground, looking for something to fight with. Her fingers wrapped around something that seemed solid, and she pulled at it. She came up with a clod of dirt.
Ah, fuck it, she thought,
and then sprang up and flung it at the hovercraft as it went past. The clod connected with the head of the second Oban, sitting behind the first. It tilted in surprise and fell off its saddle seat, tumbling to the ground. Sagan bolted from her place in the grass and was on the Oban in an instant. The dazed creature tried to raise its weapon at Sagan. She stepped to the side, yanked it out of its hand, and clubbed the Oban with it. The Oban screeched and stayed down. In the distance, the hovercraft was wheeling around and looking to make a run at Sagan. Sagan examined the weapon in her hand, trying to see if she could make sense of the thing before the hovercraft came back her way, and decided not to bother. She grabbed the Oban, punched it in the neck to keep it subdued, and searched it for an edged weapon. She found something like a combat knife hanging from its waist. Its shape and balance was all wrong for a human hand, but there was nothing she could do about that now. The hovercraft had now turned around completely and was bearing down on Sagan. She could see the barrel of its gun spinning up to fire. Sagan reached down and, with the knife still in hand, grabbed the fallen Oban and with a grunt heaved it into the path of the hovercraft and its gun. The Oban danced as the flechettes sliced into it. Sagan, covered by the dancing Oban, stepped to the side but as close as she dared to the craft and swung the knife as the Oban flashed by. She felt a shocking wrenching of her arm and was spun hard into the ground as the knife connected with the Oban's body. She stayed down, dazed and in pain, for several minutes. When she finally got up, she saw the hovercraft idling 100 meters away. The Oban was still sitting on it, its dangling head held onto the neck by a flap of skin. Sagan pushed the Oban off the hovercraft and stripped it of its weapons and supplies. She then wiped the Oban's blood off the hovercraft as best she could and took a few minutes to learn how the machine worked. Then she turned the thing around and flew it toward the fence. The hovercraft crested the guns easily. Sagan set it down out of their range in front of Harvey and Seaborg.
"You look terrible," Harvey said.
"I feel terrible," Sagan said. "Now, would you like a ride out of here, or would you like to make some more small talk?"
"Well, that depends," Harvey said.
"Where are we going?"
"We had a mission," Sagan said. "I think we should finish it."
"Sure," Harvey said. "The three of us with no weapons, taking on at least several dozen Oban soldiers and attacking a science station."
Sagan hauled up the Oban weapon and handed it to Harvey. "Now you have a weapon," she said. "All you have to do is learn how to use it."
"Swell,"
Harvey said, taking the weapon.
"How long do you think until the Oban realize one of their hovercraft is missing?" asked Seaborg.
"No time at all," Sagan said. "Come on, it's time to get moving."
"Well, looks like your recording is done,"
Bhutan said to Jared, and turned to his desk display. Jared knew it before Bhutan said it, because the vice-like pinching had stopped mere instants ago.
"What do you mean that I'm the thing to get you back on track against the Colonial Union?" Jared said.
"I'm not going to help you."
"Why not?" Bhutan said. "You're not interested in saving the human race from a slow asphyxiation?"
"Let's just say your presentation does not leave me entirely convinced," Jared said.
Bhutan shrugged.
"So it goes," he said. "Naturally, you being me, or some facsimile thereof, I would have hoped you'd come around to my way of thinking. But in the end, no matter how many of my memories or personal tics you may have, you're still someone else, aren't you? Or are for now, anyway."
"What does that mean?" Jared said.
"I'll get to that," Bhutan said. "But let me tell you a story first. It will make some things clear. Many years ago, the Oban and a race called the Ayla got into a go-around over some real estate. On the surface, the Ayla and the Oban were well-matched militarily, but the Aylaite army consisted of clones. This meant they were all susceptible to the same genetic weapon, a virus the Oban designed that would lie dormant for a while, long enough to be transmitted, and then dissolve the flesh of whatever poor Ayla it was living in. The Aylaite army was wiped out, and then so were the Ayla."
"That's a lovely story," Jared said.
"Just wait, because it gets better," Bhutan said. "Not too long ago, I thought about doing the same sort of thing to the Colonial Defense Forces.
But doing that is more complicated than it sounds. For one thing, Colonial Defense Forces military bodies are almost entirely immune from disease. The smart blood simply won't tolerate pathogens. And, of course, neither the CDF or Special Forces bodies are actually cloned bodies, so even if we could infect them, they wouldn't all react in the same way. But then I realized there was one thing in each CDF body that was exactly the same. Something I knew my way around intimately."
"The brain pal," Jared said.
"The brain pal," Bhutan said.
"And for it, I could create a time-release virus of its own.
one that would embed itself in the brain pal, replicate every time one CDF member communicated with another, but would stay dormant until a date and time of my choosing. Then it would cause every body system regulated by the brain pal to go haywire, everyone with a brain pal instantly dead, and all the human worlds open for conquest. Quick, easy, painless. But there was a problem. I had no way to get the virus in. My back door was for diagnostics only. I could read out and shut down certain systems, but it wasn't designed to upload code. In order to upload the code, I would need someone to accept it for me and act as a carrier. So the Oban went looking for volunteers. The Special Forces ships, Jared said. We figured the Special Forces would be more vulnerable to their brain pals locking up. All of you have never been without it, whereas regular CDF would still be able to function, and it turned out to be correct. You eventually recover, but the initial shock gave us lots of time to work with. We brought them here and tried to convince them to be carriers. First we asked, and then we insisted. Not one cracked. That's discipline. Where are they now? Jared asked. They're dead, Bhutan said. The way the Oban insist is pretty forceful. I should amend that, though. Some of them survived, and I've been using them for consciousness studies. They're alive, as much as brains in a jar can be. Jared felt sick. Fuck you, Bhutan, he said. They should have volunteered, Bhutan said. I'm glad they disappointed you, Jared said. I'll be doing the same. I don't think so, Bhutan said. What makes you different, Dirac, is that none of them had my brain and my consciousness already in their heads, and you do. Even with both, I'm not you, Jared said. You said it yourself. I said you're someone else for now, Bhutan said. I don't suppose you know what would happen to you if I transferred the consciousness that's in here. Bhutan tapped his temple. And put it in your head, do you? Jared remembered his conversation with Kynan and Harry Wilson when they suggested overlaying the recorded Bhutan consciousness upon his own, and felt himself go cold. It'll wipe out the consciousness that's already there. Yes, Bhutan said. You'll kill me, Jared said. Well, yes, Bhutan said. But I did just make a recording of your consciousness, because I need to fine-tune my own transfer. It's everything you are as of 5 minutes ago, so you'll only be mostly dead. You son of a bitch, Jared said. And when I've uploaded my consciousness into your body, I'll serve as the carrier for the virus. It won't affect me, of course, but everyone else will get its full strength. Then I'll have your squadmates shot, and then Zoe and I will head back to Colonial Union space in that capture pod you've so thoughtfully provided. I'll tell them that Charles Bhutan is dead, and the Oban will lie low until the brain pal virus strikes. Then they'll move in and force the Colonial Union to surrender. And just like that, you and I will have saved humanity. Don't put this on me, Jared said. I have nothing to do with this. Don't you? Bhutan said, amused. Listen, Dirac, the Colonial Union is not going to see me as the instrument of its demise. I'll already be dead. They're going to see you and you alone. Oh, you'll be a part of this, my friend. You don't have a choice. Chapter 14. The more I think about this plan, the less I like it, Harvey said to Sagan. They and Seaborg crouched at the line of the forest, edging the science station. Try not to think so much, Sagan said. That should be easy for you, Harvey, Seaborg said. He was trying to lighten the mood and doing a poor job of it. Sagan glanced down at Seaborg's leg. Are you going to be able to do this? She asked. Your limp's gotten worse.
I'll be fine, Seaborg said. I'm not going to sit here like a turd while you two are completing the mission.
I'm not saying that, Sagan said. I'm saying that you and Harvey could switch roles.
I'm fine, Seaborg repeated. And anyway, Harvey would kill me if I took his gig.
Goddamn right, Harvey said. This shit is what I'm good at.
My leg hurts, but I can walk on it and run on it, Seaborg said. I'll be fine. But let's not just sit here and talk about this anymore. My leg's going to tighten up.